And that's really what I feel about what we're doing here, is that all of us are called to do something. And we can all do something. We don't need to be trained to do it. A lot of it is common sense. So we are not the experts. We're here to try and help you realize your potential. So what I want to do to start with is just talk about a few principles. So we put this down and called it training. Well, we decided after we'd run one series of 10 weeks last term, we decided actually training is really the wrong word, because actually this is about us together. It's about us learning together. So it's a collaborative learning, no experts from the front. We all adopt the role of teacher and learner. All of us have got experience. All of us know about our context. We know about our neighbours. We know about the church where we are. And each of us can bring that into the room to actually share. So hopefully the way we've designed these 10 weeks is the process is designed to keep an environment of us working together. So there will be various points where we want you to chat as a team, as groups, and to share, and to feedback the following week as to maybe how you've reflected on that. So if you haven't got paper and pens, I think we have some somewhere. Yep. So if you haven't got paper and pens to make notes and you want to, there is some at the front here. So you can grab that. Or if you're here as a team from somewhere together and you want to do something bigger, grab a bit of flip chart paper if you want it. Just do what works for you. Above all, we really would like people to have very honest conversations. So, but that means we need to trust one another. It means we need to presume positive intent. So when you're sharing, think about, am I saying this in a positive way? Is this building people up? So when Paul was speaking to the churches, do whatever you can to build one another up. So we want to have that. And to accept feedback as a gift. Confidentiality, I think, is probably important in this context. If we're going to share openly about where we are as churches, maybe where we are as individuals, what we don't want to happen is for somebody to go away from here and go, oh, I was hearing about this church down the road and they're really terrible and it's really awful. So by all means, use the information that we gather here. But please be sensitive to the identities of places you're talking about, and take that role of positive intent. Above all, we want to believe that things can improve. Jesus said the church is his body, and he didn't say he was dying. So we do need to take that role where we actually believe things can improve. Be fully present. I know it's late, it's an evening, it's blustery outside. The great thing about here is there is zero mobile signal. You do not need to turn your phones off. They will not ring. If they do, then we all want to borrow your phone. but in general, please try and be fully present and take part as much as you can. Be curious. This is an opportunity for us to question, to ask people, to share in an open way. We want to deepen and share knowledge, and that requires all of us. Each week, what we hope to do is to have at least some part of the evening where you can think about something you can take away and do. And what we'd like you to do is to actually commit to those actions. Now, it's really hard. We're not going to go, oh, what are you going to do? I'm going to plant a church. I'll do it by next week. It's not going to work that way. But there might be something where you go, actually, I'm going to commit to go and buy a book to read. Or I might commit to go and visit some people in my neighbourhood. Or, you know, a small step. Or I might commit to meet with some of the other people on the course to pray during the week. That sort of thing. So if there are actions, write them down and share it with somebody. And then take a responsibility to question people the following week. How did it go? And if it didn't go so well, what can you do to help them? Not, oh, you're terrible, you didn't do it. So hold each other to account, but in a loving way. So that's really where we want to be. So the title of this evening was about the history and the sort of history of decline in the church. So I have put a graph on, but I don't want to dwell on it too much. So this is just the historic trends for the Diocese of Norwich churches. So it doesn't include non-Anglican churches. It's not a national picture. 9 years ago, just after the 2011 census came out, I was driving into Norwich and they were talking about the stats that had come out from the census. Apparently Norwich was the most unchristian city in the country. And I remember exactly where I was when that news came on. And I remember thinking, I haven't been counted. And just in my head, I had this thing, stand up and be counted, because I don't think the stats tell the big picture. And when I joined the diocese 4 years ago in my children, youth and families role, I go around all different churches and the picture I see is not what I hear. The picture I see is of churches that are solidly pursuing Jesus. And some of them have only got one person in, or two people, or three people, but they're open. They've kept those churches open. And there is a positive thing out there that we need to realise. Are we going to listen to the creator of the universe, or are we going to listen to the media? It's very easy to listen to the negative story. The reality, in terms of counted numbers, Sunday attendance, is that since 2007, it's 2% lower, 21% lower than in 1997, 36% lower than in 1989. It is a downward slope. I suppose the slightly positive thing is that it has levelled out a bit, which is good. And actually, since the last 3 or 4 years, the church commissioners have been measuring what we call worshipping community rather than just Sunday attendance. So that would be, you know, people who are engaged in the wider sense of the church. And that looks pretty good. So what we can't really tell is this just because Sundays are not so hot anymore and people have got other things to do, but actually churches are meeting at different times, or is it a general decline? But I don't really want to focus too much on that. So this is a church in North London, which is now a Tesco Express. And in an article in The Telegraph, Tim Stanley wrote this. Put it this way. Imagine, say that the Anglican Church was like Tesco. If Tesco stopped advertising, people would stop shopping there. If Tesco constantly banged on about how its own products are old-fashioned and in need of updating, people would stop shopping there. If Tesco said that it would be nice if you'd visit once in a while, but entirely understood why you don't, people would stop shopping there. Christians have become their own worst enemy, killing their faith with silence. So what I want us to think about is why. What is it about why we are here tonight? What has driven us to get out on a blustery Monday night? I want to just play you a short video.
Yo, what's up, YouTubelies? This is comedian Michael Jr. I just did a stand-up comedy show in Winston-Salem. That was fun. Winston-Salem, home of the Winstons? The Salemses, it's some good people there, like for real. Anyway, I was there doing stand-up, and I said to myself, you know what? It's break time. For those that don't know, Michael Jr.'s break time is exactly that. In the middle of my stand-up comedy, I stop doing it, sit down, and just kick it with the people. Check it out. Just some random dude. I don't even know who he is. We just start kicking it, and look what happens.
Let me talk to the brother right there. Yeah, yeah. What's your name, bro?
Daryl.
I'm going to need you to slow down with all that, bro. For real, you're scaring the white people. You can't do that, girl.
I'm sorry, bro.
You're scaring me too, though. Wow. Well, what do you do for a living, Daryl?
I work at Oak Ridge Military Academy. I'm the music director there.
Musical director at Oak Ridge Musical Academy.
Okay. Yeah.
You got a deep voice. I would not want to get you mad. Jonathan, come here. You're like, oh, snap. 9 Jonathan show up. It's amazing, dude. So you're a musical director.
Cool. Yes, sir.
All right, so let me get a couple bars of like Amazing Grace. Can you do the first part of that? We didn't plan this. Just so y'all know, we didn't plan this at all. I'm just randomly talking. Go ahead.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Wow. That bro could sing. You know what I'm saying?
All right. Now, what you give me the version is if your uncle just got out of jail, you got shot in the back when you was a kid. I'm just saying, let me see the hood version real quick, if you know which version I'm talking about, just see if that exists. Let me see what you got.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
The difference is that when you know your why, you come from a different place. And are you here because you're anxious about the future of the church? Or are you here because you're positive about taking the good news to new people? Because anxiety seeks control. It looks at how do I make things happen? But love seeks contemplation. How can I be present in my relationships? Anxiety seeks professionals. Who is the expert that can solve the problem? Love seeks processes. What can we do together to uncover the best path? Anxiety wants products. What book or curriculum or church planting and revitalization training course will teach us? Love desires presence. Who will be the model? Anxiety lifts up gurus. Who has the charisma to draw others? Love relies on guides. Who has the gifts for living alongside others? Anxiety rests in results. How many have committed and made the grade? But love rests in relationships. Who are those we've befriended? Anxiety seeks conformity. Are people meeting our expectations? But love brings out creativity. In what fresh ways are we challenging and being challenged? Anxiety wants activity. What will keep people busy? Love brings awareness. What are the real needs to be met? Anxiety seeks answers. Here's what we think. Here's what we need. Love seeks questions. What do you think? Or as Jesus said, who do you say I am? In summary, anxiety drives people apart. And so what we want to think about is a little bit about why are we here? What is it about church planting What is it about revitalizing churches that we really want to see? When I'm working with churches looking at wanting young people in their churches, I often ask this question. Do you actually want young people in your church? Or do you just want young looking old people? Because often what we want is a little bit more of what we are ourselves. We don't actually have the love that says, actually, I'm in it for you, even if what I get out of it goes down. Am I prepared to pray that the church will be revitalized? And actually, what if nobody knew I was involved? Would I be happy? I hope I would. I think my ego might get in the way a bit, but I hope that actually we're in it for God's kingdom, not our own. In the United States, there's an organization called SEND, which is, I can't remember what it stands for, but it's basically a church planting movement, and they have a manifesto. And I just want to touch on the first five things on that manifesto. Prayer and obedience to the Holy Spirit, in light of the Word of God, take priority over systems and structures. So when we're planting churches, what is our priority? Is our priority God? Or is it to make it match how we want to run it? Now, actually, from my own personal experience, trying to do this program in the diocese is a bit like that. There are structures. And trying to say, actually, we need to be a bit more flexible is really hard. And so actually, we need to keep challenging that obedience to the Holy Spirit. And that means we need to pray. And we need to pray lots. And we need to pray regularly. And we need to put it as a priority. The second one is that church planting is both the impulse and the result of multiplying disciples who hear and obey. We can't plant churches unless people grow as disciples. And if people grow as disciples, we should be able to plant and grow churches. The two are intrinsically linked. Every believer is a disciple maker with a holy calling and vocation. We're all in this. There aren't experts who are going to do it for us. We're all in it. We all play a part. When Paul talks about the body, we all may have a slightly different part, the hands, the eyes, the feet, but actually we all play a part together. The next one is that planting contextually appropriate churches will require much innovation and risk-taking. Much of this new learning will come from the church and from the world around. What we're not trying to do is replicate. It's not like cell division where you just go, oh, I'll divide the cell, they'll look exactly the same. This is about creating new life. It's about new things starting. So we need to remove our own blinkers as to how it might look and do things different. Planting churches that bear witness to the redemptive presence of the kingdom of God in the world requires a holistic engagement of the community with the whole gospel. We need to be reaching our communities with all of the gospel, the good news. And it needs to be good news. Is your church good news to your community? If your church didn't exist, would the community notice? The church needs to be good news to the community. And we as individuals need to be good news to the community. We also need to be good news to our churches. Sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're a burden on them. But we need to be good news. So that was just the first five. There's actually on their website, Send Institute, there are 12 of those statements. And it's a really, I really like it. It's a really good summary of why we do what we do. It's just a good starting point. The other place that you could go to look at some of the stuff around church planting is here in the UK. Bishop Rick, the Bishop of, I think it's Stepney in London, Islington, thank you, is responsible for an organisation that started off as looking at church planting around London, but actually now is looking at it much more nationally, Centre for Church Multiplication. And it's called the Gregory Centre, and that is because, and we'll look at some of this stuff over the next few weeks in terms of the history of church planting. Gregory the Great was a reluctant leader of the Church of Rome. He was somebody from business, plucked in to become Pope, and part of his legacy was the vision for this country, to plant churches here. So he sent St. Augustine in 597 AD. We have a history of church planting in this country. All of our churches were planted at some point. Every one is a new contextual church, and we need to continue that. When we talk about maintaining the tradition, depends how far back you go. Are we maintaining the tradition from that time of planting new churches in every context? That's really where we should be. If you're interested, there is a 2020, the Gregory Center does an annual church planting conference next year, or this year now. London, 23rd of June, Leeds, 24th of June, Bristol, 25th of June. I'm already booked. Last year, it was really inspiring. A lot of people from churches that had already been planted, a lot of teaching from experts from overseas. So really good place to be. And there's some great stuff on there as well for churches in terms of short Bible studies to actually get you thinking about actually how could we be ready to plant churches. So in terms of thinking about the church, it's very easy to talk about the negatives. It's very easy to talk about how awful things are. But actually, I want to remind us about what it says in Ephesians about building one another up. Speak well of one another. And as a whole, as part of this program, we want to speak well of one another. So we don't say how bad somebody else's church is. We talk about encouraging things. We don't say, oh, well, you do that old style and that's just rubbish. Or you do that new style and that's just rubbish. We actually talk well of one another. We also speak well about the church. The church is described, not exactly, but as the bride of Christ, his body on earth. If the church is a bride, would you go up to a bride and say, you look really rubbish today? You're looking really rough. You wouldn't, would you? So every time we do that, we're actually telling Jesus that he's wrong. Because he says he loves his church. Now, if you have decided that you actually know better than Jesus, maybe you want to go home. Because actually, we believe that he is the author and creator. So we need to think hard and long about how we refer to the church. The church is his body. And he says, the gates of hell will not prevail. So when you say, oh, the church is dying, in two generations it'll be dead, you're saying Jesus is wrong? He says it will prevail. It may not be through us. It may not be in our context. But his church will prevail. So we need to remember that in the way we actually approach things. So this one, I heard a story about a Welsh farmer and an Australian farmer, and they were talking about farming. And they were discussing the size of their farm. So the Welsh farmer was talking about his, and the Australian farmer said, well, my farm's sort of the size of Wales. And the Welsh farmer was sort of, I don't understand that. I can't get my head around it. Because he said, I spend all my time building fences to keep the sheep in. And the Australian farmer said, we don't bother with fences. We just build wells. And if you go back to thinking about anxiety, anxiety causes us to build fences. It causes us to think, oh, I don't want that to happen because you'll steal the people from my church. Anxiety causes us to be negative towards what God is doing. If we build wells, then people will come and people will be refreshed and the kingdom will be built. The other thing about fences is we live in a culture of offense. We live in a culture where whenever anybody says something, it's, I'm offended. I feel affronted. And what does offense do? It causes us to put a fence between us and that other person. So we need to speak well of one another, speak well of the church, and seek to build wells. Explorers Lewis and Clark had to adapt. They felt, this was in the States, they felt that they could find a way to the West Coast if they followed the Mississippi River up to its source. That they would get to the head of the river, there would be a watershed, they could put their boats in the other side of the watershed and sail all the way down. The only problem was, when they got to the top of the Mississippi, they were in the Rocky Mountains. And they had a decision to make. Do I turn back or do I go forward? And so they had to adapt their plan and they had to take risk. And there was a point at which they couldn't go back. They'd already overcommitted. And so they had to press on. And that's what we need to do. We need to be prepared to take that risk, to go beyond where we are comfortable with, to press on into what God's calling us to. There's various research. I'll put a slide up at the end that's got the various different places some of these figures come from. So we could probably do a rough straw poll here. Who came to faith here under the age of 24? Yeah, it's a pretty large number. That is still true, that statistic, that roughly 75% of people come to faith before they're in their mid-20s. So young people are important to us. It is a place where faith is formed. Two bits of research. One of them, the research was done twice because they didn't believe the figures. So they did it and they said that can't possibly be true. So this was research of around, I think it was around about 2,000 young people from a range of contexts, not church people. And they asked them about their faith. 13% of all 11 to 18-year-olds are practicing Christians. Doesn't sound right, does it? Separate piece of research, separate group of people. 19% of young people consider themselves a follower of Jesus. It is a fascinating statistic. And actually, when we do work in schools, in things like prayer spaces, and say, actually, if you could ask God what a question, what would it be? And if you want to engage with God, what would you say? It is amazing how many young people know exactly what they would ask. They don't have a problem with saying, I know God exists. They just don't know how he's relevant to them. So it is an encouraging thing that actually young people are open. There is an opportunity there for us. In terms of families, some of these figures are crazy. 95% of parents recognise their responsibility to teach their children about Christian faith, but 92% felt they should be doing more. Fewer than 75% said they ever shared Bible stories with their children. So as a church, families are a really important part of where our mission is. There's some research, two bits of research, one of them referred to on the previous slide, talking Jesus. There was a piece of research done with young people and a second piece done with adults. And it's interesting how, whether you're an optimist or a pessimist, which side of the figures you look. So do you look at the figure that says 59% of people did not want to know more about Jesus, the adults? Or do you look at the figure that says nearly 20% of people wanted to know more about Jesus? It's one in five. One in five people out there want to know more about Jesus. But when you ask Christians, are you going to share it? I think the figure's 80% of Christians say they wouldn't really actually ask them. That's terrible. So there's fruit out there. Ian Dibel, when he was doing this session, said, you know, that's the thing. There isn't a problem with the harvest. There is no problem with the harvest. In the general population, 60% of people, when asked how they described Jesus, said he was a real person who actually lived. 60% of people. We're not starting from a position where people don't have an idea. We're starting from a position where they don't know how to engage. So there is potential. When we're looking at engaging with communities, 0 to 4s really matter. How we parent, how we do church. School-aged children are the ones who decide whether they have a faith or not. That is when people decide. And experience matters at a young age. It's not just knowledge. In general, churches other than the Church of England are doing much better. So over the last 30 years, about 175 Anglican churches across the east of England have closed. In the same time, 200 independent churches have formed. So it's not about the harvest. It might be about whether we're actually giving good news. So just to sort of give you a little bit of a thing about the overall church planting program. The program itself has got two main parts. One is training and the other part is actually working in some focus areas. So we have 10 areas where we want to go narrow and deep. There's a lot of churches. We can't work everywhere. So we want to put some investment into some places who can then use that to multiply and to help places around them. We don't expect this to be a short project. Although the funding is for 5 years, we expect it to be much longer. It's taken generations for the church to be in the state it's in. It's going to take several generations to reverse that. So we need to be in it for the long haul. We do have a focus on young people, but not exclusively, because young people are part of a community and we need to support the whole community. But the reality is, if young people are the place where people choose faith, we need to be where they are. There's two places where young people spend their time. One is in school and one is in bed. One of those is inappropriate for us to actually use as a mission field. So we need to focus around the high school catchment areas. That doesn't mean we'll be necessarily going into the school. What it means is we look at where people are travelling, where the catchment areas are, where people do their shopping, where is their natural geography, and actually do stuff around that. So one of the projects we're just starting to think about at the moment is on a village green where all the kids get dropped off. And actually, can we do something there that just engages with those kids at the point where they're dropped off on the school bus before they head off home? So very simple stuff where it might just be some low-level engagement, maybe a drop-in youth cafe, which over time we can then invite people to something new. Obviously, I've talked about the training. And we're working with resource churches. So these are some of the larger churches in the diocese who have been nominated as resource churches, where the diocese will put some extra resource in, hopefully, to actually enable them to actually reach out. So at the moment, St. Thomas in Norwich and Fountain of Life here are two of those churches. Now, in terms of speaking well, it's been really interesting. I went to one church and they said to me, we want to go somewhere and see some projects which are really working. And I said, well, I can take you to two places, either St. Thomas's or Fountain of Life. And I said, oh, no, we don't want to go to a church like that. And it was like, well, if you want to see where something's working, you might need to go to a church that's not quite like the one that's not. And it was it's a really tough thing to say to people. But we need to acknowledge and really hold up the churches who are able to have that capacity, because actually they will be under attack. You know, Satan will not be happy that churches are starting to be creative and reach out into the community. And so we need to actually hold these places up in prayer, because they are a valuable resource to all of us, to encourage us. I'm sure if we'd been sitting somewhere cold and drafty and damp tonight, we would have not, you know, it wouldn't have been as nice. So we do need to make sure we hold on to those. So what I want you to do now is, on your own, we're just going to, I guess in silence, unless you want to hum to yourselves. We might have some music on, that'd be great. I'd like you to think about, why are you here? Are you here out of anxiety? Are you here out of love for maybe a geographic area, maybe a group of people? Are you here because you want the church to grow, or you want to travel less? Or what is your motivation? Why are you here? Maybe think a little bit further back than that, about when you came to faith. What was it that excited you? And be honest with yourself, because that might be one of the action points to take away, is to maybe question your why. But why are we here? So, and we'll do that for 5 minutes, I guess, and then Matt will come and lead us through some other activities. Thank you.
Really helpful session to our sessions. We've got 10 sessions. Really helpful to bring a notebook with you. We didn't advertise that, but just to keep some of the notes of these things. We do have some pens and some paper here at the front. If you think that just in this time of reflection, you'd like, that might help you just to think about this question so that you can note down. It's just right down here at the front, so just where Paul is. So if anyone wants one, just wave your hand and we'll either come to the front or wave a hand and we'll come and give you one. But let's just, in the next 5 minutes, just on your own, there'll be time for, in a minute, for you to discuss this with each other. But we thought, just to start off, just to do it yourself. So let's have 5 minutes just to do that. And if we turn the music up, then that might help. So. And keep thinking about them. When we said that this session was going to be not just kind of like a person up the front delivering everything, we really did mean that. And so where we're going for the rest of the evening is that we're going to have some time where you can discuss the things that Jonathan shared on your tables. And you can have, particularly if you came with people from your church, we think that might be a great opportunity for you to have a think about them. We've got some questions for you to help some of that discussion. And then after a bit of time doing that, we're then going to have an opportunity for you to feedback some of your thoughts to the rest of the room or to ask some questions to Jonathan or to myself. And or the team, and we'll try and answer them. We'll see how we go, and then we're going to spend some time in prayer. So that's where we're heading for the rest of our evening. But before we get there, one of the things that we want to do is that we want to hear kind of some stories of what is going on the ground, and some people who are doing some of this work. And we thought, as it was first time here at Fountain of Life, and knowing just a little bit of your story, we thought it might be useful, particularly for those who aren't part of the Fountain of Life family, for you to hear a bit of the story. And so I'd love to invite Paul up. I'm going to interview him. I know some of you guys like him a little bit, so and you express that in a nice silent way, so that's nice of you.
You get used to that.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. There you are. So, Paul, one of the first things that kind of hit me as I walked in is just what a lovely building that you've got here. Mm. And do you want to just tell a bit of the story as to how Fountain of Life have this beautiful building that you meet in every week?
For the benefit of those who were here yesterday and heard a little bit of this in my last sermon, I'm sorry you're going to hear it repeated. 1996 was the time when the Fountain of Life began. It grew out of the parish church in Ashiel. So we had two congregations who were meeting in different places and worshipping in different ways and doing the kind of different things. So the part that became the Fountain of Life met in community centres for about 8 years. We outgrew the first one and moved to St. Tony and worshipped there for a few years. And gradually over time, I think there were various kind of prophetic voices in the congregation who were saying, we really ought to be looking for our own place. I think our vicar at the time was quite keen to not do that, having got out of the business of having to look after medieval buildings and things. But he, if I remember the story correctly, he committed to pray about it. And before he'd finished praying, somebody knocked on his door and said, God says I've got to give you a piece of land to build on. And so he thought, okay, well, obviously I've got to do something about this. So we applied for planning permission on that particular plot of land, and it was rejected. And it went to appeal, and it got all the way to the Houses of Parliament. We had a fairly prominent barrister who gave his time pro bono to kind of take it through the process, and it was still turned down at the appeal. Whilst that was going on, this was a garage, and where you're standing now, there used to be an inspection pit here. There was a paint spray shop out where the foyer is now. It wasn't as big as this. It stopped where that pillar is that came across there. This is a new bay. And the chap who owned it was going to retire. He lived in the bungalow next door. He was going to retire, and he'd heard about what was going on and said, I understand you're looking for somewhere to put a church, and do you want to buy my garage? Which meant that we then needed to find out from the local authority if we could get change of use on this. So that process went on. We ended up with a short window, narrow window, where we were able to say, yes, this is going to work, because he kind of set a bit of a deadline. And the local authority said, yeah, you can do that. And I can't remember exactly, but I think it was about a month, something like that, we had to raise £250,000 to buy the place. So
how many people were in your church at the time that you were kind of considering that?
About 120-ish, somewhere around about that.
Right, so that's a lot of money per person, isn't it, really?
Yeah. A ridiculous amount of money per person. So Martin, the rector of Vicar, had a gift day. And I remember the thing as clearly as if it was yesterday. He had the gift day, and we counted up the pledges and the promises. That gift day raised $292,000 in one go.
Wow.
And all he'd said was that we're going to have a gift day, go home, pray about it, see what God's saying to you about it, listen to what God's saying to you about it. And I remember him in tears as he announced the amount of money. So it gave us enough to buy the place and convert the bungalow into meeting rooms and a place for parents and toddler group to start. And that's where it began. There were subsequent gift days. Eventually we had enough to get started. We'd had plans drawn. We appointed an amazing builder, a guy called Terry Garrod, who had been in the construction industry for 40-odd years, who set about building a place for us. And we'd said to him, we don't have enough money to finish this, so you need to create a building plan that is in phases so that you can, you know, for the sensible places to stop, which he did. So we had four phases. We got to the end of the third phase when the money ran out. We had to say to him, Terry, you're going to have to stop now because there's no money left. And he said, this is kind of pause, and he said, I've been in the construction industry 40 years. And he said, I put up a lot of steel frame buildings. And he said, I've never worked on a project like this. He said, because always when you put up steelwork, something doesn't fit. You know, bolts don't line, the bolt holes don't line up, or it was a piece of steel that's not the right size or something. He said, but everything in this building's fit. Everything. He said, that doesn't happen. He said, all the materials arrived on time, we had all the right labor, we had, everything's just worked. He said, it doesn't happen. He said, so I'm going to finish it. And he just left us to, you know, think about it. I think somebody said, aren't we the ones who're supposed to have the faith here? So he carried on, and we ended up taking out a small mortgage, which, in the grand scheme of things, you know, wasn't huge. And so we finished it, and then 28th of October 2004, the Bishop of Lynn came and opened it, and we've been here ever since. So we've had 15 years. This year, it was 2019. We just refurbished, so we put new carpets and changed the chairs and the furniture and redecorated. And it has just been extraordinary.
I mean, it does sound like there's some amazing stories what God has done in that. But of course, the church is not the building, is it?
No.
That's just a place to hold what God is doing. So, you started off with 120,
mm-hmm.
or rather, at that time you had 120. How big is
we're now over 300,
right?
And that's over 300 that are on the electoral roll for the church. Beyond that, we've got a number of missional communities. So these are very informal expressions of church. There's one in Carbrook, kind of big new housing estate, where we've been working with children and young people for quite a while, and gradually gathering parents alongside them. Interestingly, they described what we were doing as their community church. We didn't kind of go there and say, look, we want to be church for you. They were the ones who said, oh, no, the Fountain of Life are our community church, which was quite extraordinary. There's one at was Sheldon, is now West Deering, which is actually outside of the Diocese of Norwich, but we won't say too much about that. Swanton Morley, Scarning, again, similar gatherings of people that, you know, quite often we don't see the people here, but they're people from here are going there and doing stuff in other places.
So lovely building, great growth the last 15 years. There must be people here kind of like who go to their, you know, their village church or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's great. But, you know, I mean, that's never going to happen here. So, you know, what would you say to them? And what, and, you know, does it necessarily need, does what's happened here need to happen there?
No. I mean, my response would be, well, if you think it's never going to happen here, my first question would be, well, why not? Everything that we've done here has been along the lines of we stop, we pray, we seek vision, and we enter into the vision. And you follow that, you invest in the thing that you see God doing or you, the thing you hear God talking about, and you invest into that. And God's blueprints fit together. You know, when you put a building like this together, all the nuts and bolts fit. It's the same with mission. It's if you're hearing what he's saying and going and doing that thing, being obedient to that thing, then things happen and the atmosphere changes and people start to see it and they gather it.
Grand. Well, thank you so much for having us here, Paul. It's great to have your hospitality and great to hear some of the story of what you've been up to. If you have a question for Paul, I know that Paul would absolutely love to, not right now. But maybe afterwards, maybe kind of in when we do our little bit after our discussion time, then please do. I'm sure Paul would love, or if at the end on your way out, you want to ask Paul about some of the story here. I'm sure he would love to chat to you about it. But what we're going to do now is that we're going to, just in your tables, for about 20, 25 minutes, I'd love you to have a conversation with each other about what we've been talking about tonight, to share some of that learning, to share some of that consideration. We've got some questions which are going to come up on the screen. I've got them written down. I've got them printed out on some pieces of paper that we're going to hand around as well. But I would love you to spend some time just in your tables Maybe you've come on your own. If someone's here on your own, you're very, very welcome. Hopefully you'll find some people around a table to chat to. But spend the next 20, 25 minutes or so having the discussion, and then we'll feedback and talk after that. So feedback. So off you go and have the discussion. Perhaps you've got a question that you'd like to ask Paul or Jonathan or me even. Yeah, I'll see what I can do. Or maybe something to reflect back to the rest of the group. So I'll give you a minute or so just to finish off your chats and have a think about that in your groups. So I hope you really enjoyed just sitting here as a little crew from the diocese here, and we've just loved hearing kind of like just the bubble of conversation. I hope you've kind of like been engaging with the things that we've heard and thought about. So is there anybody who's I think you two are going to have to stand up a little bit so people can kind of see you. Does anyone have something that they'd like to perhaps ask these two about the topics that we've kind of been talking about? Or you might want to have a question about the course, about the next 10 weeks. Or maybe you've got a reflection back on the things that your group have been discussing. Is anyone willing to be brave, be bold, be faith-filled, and be the first person to share something or ask something? Here we go.
I just wanted to ask if there'd be cake.
Will there be cake?
There will be no revival without cake, Lauren.
There we go. Right, here we go. Great.
One of the principles that was bounced about was about depth and how there is a place and a hunger for depth, and also the reality of... Okay. So about, access for everyday people who don't get ritual. So the reality of, I suppose, I think there's a frustration presented of how is the church going to overcome its infrastructure issues and enable church to be of relative and depth.
So I think one of the things that you've done there is that you've really helpfully put that question on the table. And we've got these structures, and we've got traditions, and we've got rituals. But at the same time, sometimes they're helpful, sometimes they're not. But also people are hungry for depth. They're not just wanting kind of shallow stuff. Am I reflecting kind of what you said, kind of right? How do we get through those structures and those things that often people look at the church and think, oh, they're just going to get in the way? Jonathan, as part of the Church of England, as I am as well, but you're working for the diocese. You know, is there hope in the Diocese of Norwich?
I was trying to think how on earth to answer that. I think one of the things that I see is a variety of expression. I think in terms of how we speak well of one another and how we approach anything to do with revitalizing church, if you try to do what you're currently doing, it's like Einstein says, just doing the same and expecting a different outcome is crazy on the one hand. The other thing is that we can look at the variety of church and go, does God love the church? the broad breadth of church and the different expressions of church. Yes, he does. So we're not trying to promote our own brand, our own flavour. One of the things that's really challenged me recently is I was working with a group of young people, and I was also chatting with a family who had been at a very lively, charismatic, you know, black walls, lights and all that, and church. And they decided to leave it and go to a very high church environment. And it was because what they wanted was depth. They didn't want tradition. What they wanted was a depth of spirituality. And actually, the way they felt was that the world was too busy and they just wanted to check out. And actually, for the young people, they were just finding, actually, I get all this at school. I don't need more stuff. I just want quiet. So it's interesting that actually what we need to do is to think about actually what's the context we're working with, not what is the style of church we're promoting, and actually allow people to enable people to have that depth. And that might mean us being in a very difficult position. My tradition is not Anglican. I actually lead a non-Anglican church. But I work for the diocese. That has been an interesting balance sometimes, but actually it's church. And so we can do that. I think we just have to really hold our own ideals very lightly and allow people to give them the tools for them to experience their spirituality. It's not about compromising the message. The style may change, but the message is the same. We've got to keep the message the same. Do you want to?
Sorry, just picking up on the key point, because I'm involved in networking nationally on this issue. So, spirituality.
Can I just ask where you're from? Just
Swaffham.
A bit of background. From Swaffham. Okay.
Honestly, just from Swaffham.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know. And I do a little bit of work with the diocese. So spirituality is the key to this whole thing.
I don't think that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that where people are at with their spirituality, when young people are asked, do you have a faith? Do you believe in something? There will be a starting point, and what we need to do is to work with that starting point.
I've just been working with Y2K, the Catholic National Conference, and seeing the difference and plethora of starting points. And I think I just challenge that point on spirituality. I think maybe for a different conversation.
Yeah, let's have a conversation.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much for that. That's grand. Anyone else got something to share or a question to ask or something to reflect? Yeah.
Yeah, I think despite the figures we saw of the decline of the Church of England, the general feel is so much positivity here. There are a lot of people here saying, not sure why I'm here, but I'm expectant that God's going to do something. And I think that's what's really struck me, is so many people say, oh, God's going to do something, and that's why I'm here. And so I think there's something that we almost need to capitalize on now, because there is an expectancy, and I think we almost need to have an almost greater expectancy and think bigger and not limit possibly. I fall into the trap of limiting what God can do because by limiting God, by thinking what is possible. And I think it's now getting to the stage where we've got to think of the bigger picture and think of the impossible, and that all things are possible from through God. But it's actually the positivity that I'm actually blown away with here, really.
Grant, thank you very much.
Cool.
Anything else? Keep me fit. Yeah, this is good.
That's why we're doing sport ministry, Matt.
The Church of England has been talking about how do we get the young people in the church for a long time. And we float them different. I can't remember the actual, what they call this theme they're on to next. They only had two themes that night, and one of them was the same anyway. How do we pay the quota, all these other, get the other church to pay the quota? But this was something entirely different. Sorry, I'm not used to a microphone or talking like this. And they always talk about young people and so forth. I was church warden, I'd been church warden for quite some time. And they talk about young people, and we had to answer a question. So they asked me, at my turn, to answer. And young people in your church, and is there many? I said, no, I'm in the old church. And there isn't many, but I send them to another church, and that church was the Fountain of Life. It wasn't called that. That was a new thing. That was the first name for it. And I said, no, there's not many young children, because if I get any questions about young people, I said, well, go to the new thing. That's probably, you'll find your children will be interested in that.
What do you guys... What do you think about the need in... That's an example of churches working together, I suppose, really. And also, what if your church is realistically, or feels realistically, either that work with young people isn't for you? So, Paul, how do you feel about churches working together?
I think churches working together is the way we should be. We are all part of the same royal priesthood. We're all called by God. We're all part of the same faith. So, where there are opportunities to work together, we should. We should be supporting each other. We should be resourcing each other. We as a church look for opportunities to do that. If somebody comes to us and says we want to do something new, we'd look to see what we could do together. The point about it, though, is that what we'd want to do is to see that we can get something started, so that it can then continue under its own steam. So we'd want to be planting the seeds and training and equipping and building people up so that they can take that on and develop it themselves and run it, because that's how multiplication happens. So being able to do that, having those opportunities, is a great way of building church and building community.
Jonathan, about you, help, my church has no children, and realistically, that's going to be quite hard for us. What do you think?
I think a couple of things that came out there. The first thing is, I want to really honour you for saying that actually this is not somewhere that we can really look after you. You should go there, because that's a hard thing to do. It's a picture of that wells, not fences, of actually saying, actually, where is the life that's going to, the water that's going to give you life, and that being the most important thing. So I want to honour that. I think the other thing was something you said right at the beginning, which is that sense of how are we going to get people to come. The difference that we're trying to talk about here is it's not about getting people to come. It's about going to people. The church, we're never going to reach the unchurched unless we go to them. And so... part of the work we're doing with the program is about sports ministry. So actually doing sports ministry where youth and adults can engage in an activity which is really popular that people want to do, but in a way which introduces them to the faith. So one of the examples that is being used at the moment is prayer and Pilates. So you go and do Pilates, and you do it to worship music, and while you're doing it, somebody prays over you. we're actually hot off the press. We're gonna try doing it at 7:45 in the morning at Diocesan House. So that'll be an interesting one to see how that goes. But you know, those things are ways. So one of the other the stories around that is just, you know, being honourable in what you do. So if you're playing sport, being polite to the referee might be a real witness. And actually people may see that as a difference. And so there are ways we can use sport to introduce people to what it means to be a Christian and then invite them. So it's about, you know, it's not about trying to get people in. You know, we're not trying to sort of, we're trying to actually go to them and say, actually, you know, how can we journey with you to introduce you to Jesus? And that becomes church.
Just, I'm going to steal a line that I've got from Karen. I hope this is all right. Thank you. Karen has this great line which goes that, you know, when the tide comes in, all the boats in the harbour come up. So if we're all together, then, you know, what we're doing blesses everybody else. It blesses each other. And I think it's just a great picture that you don't do things in isolation. You do it together. Whatever the initiative is, do it together.
The other thing is I actually wrote down something from the toilets.
I hope you weren't in those ones. It wasn't supposed to be there.
Yeah, from the toilets. It was slightly interesting in that it was on the side wall, and it would have been helpful if it was in front of me. But because it started with the word focus. So it's from Matthew 14, 22-33. It says, focus on me, not the storm. And, you know, that's what we need to do. We need to not look at the storm around us, but to actually focus on Jesus. And he'll do the work.
Grand. What we're going to do now is, as Paul said earlier, the key to so much of this is hearing from the Lord and pressing into him and learn and listening to him and asking and talking with him. So we really love you on your tables to spend, we've got 10 minutes or so left. Just spend some time praying. Have a conversation, have a conversation with the Lord together. Perhaps you might want to pray together about your whys or some of the things that you think these are my take homes for this week. Or you might want to start praying for your context. Lord, what have you got for us here? So last 10 minutes, really love you in your tables to pray for the course, pray for each other and pray for your context. So let's finish with that. And I'll draw our prayers together at the end. So let's do that to finish. Father, we thank you that, Lord, you love your church and you love each of our churches. And we pray that you would continue to give us your heart and your vision, Lord, that we would be people who would be willing to go out with your good news. And Lord, I know that I'm not always confident about that and I don't always know what I'm doing. So, Lord, we ask for your help and we ask for your spirit. So, Lord, would you encourage us as we go on this journey in the next 10 weeks in the name of Jesus. Amen. Well, thank you very much for being with us. Keep these conversations going. We'll be back here next week. So more conversation next time. If you wanted the slides from Jonathan's talk, you can email Lucy. How would they get Lucy's email address? Ah, it is lucy.elton@dioceseofnorwich.org. There you go. So Lucy, so if you want the slides, we can send them through. They will be uploaded to the website eventually. Also, if you want to give us any feedback, because we would love to know, we're constantly evolving these sessions to make them any good. We're going to have some feedback forms on the table at the back. We'll just assume that it's been it's been brilliant. But we won't know why it's brilliant. website hasn't been updated yet. But it's lucy.elton. Anyway, Yuan, thanks for coming, everybody. We'll be here next week at 6:30 for refreshment, 7 o'clock start. Thank you so much for coming, and a safe journey home, everybody.